Hello, I'm Wendy Halley, and you're listening to Lucid Cafe. Episode, we're going to be going in a little bit different direction. My friend and colleague Marie Froelich is here with me. Perhaps you'll remember her from episode 6 when she talked about her ayahuasca experience. Well, she has offered to come back and interview me on my own podcast about shamanism because I was going to try to talk about it all by myself. she offered to come on and help me do it. So I'm really appreciative.
Well, it's great to be here, Wendy. And I'm also extremely curious and have a lot of questions about shamanism. It's been one of the things I've loved learning more about over the years. And having had a session with you many years back really grounded and fortified me with a spirit animal that I, to this day, still revere. And so I love this opportunity to be able to ask some serious questions about your experience and your services. And tell me, what is shamanism really?
Well, let me just give the caveat that everything I'm saying is the gospel according to Wendy. If you talk to a different shamanic practitioner, you're probably going to hear different answers. So I'm just putting that out there. But shamanism in general it's ancient medicine. It's been on the planet for tens of thousands of years. Every culture has had some sort of shamanic character doing his or her thing. The common thread universally is an altered state of consciousness. And of course, each culture, each tribe goes about getting into this altered state in different ways. A lot of people are familiar with using plant medicines to get into an altered state, like you did with ayahuasca. Some cultures will use special breathing techniques or will fast, go on vision quests. I use sound, which is the safest and easiest way to get into an altered state. And so this is where it gets strange. What happens is the shamanic practitioner, once they're in this altered state, they travel from this reality where you and I are having a conversation to a different reality. And this different reality is referred to as the dream time, the spirit world, non-ordinary reality, non-physical reality, all different names for the same place. And then where it gets even stranger is that when we're in this other place, we connect with helping spirits. And the helping spirits are there to do the healing work and give information.
How would you define yourself as a shaman that way?
I would, I actually wouldn't call myself a shaman.
Okay.
It's become the word that defines this practice sort of around the world now. I don't think the word, I think it's a Siberian word originally, but now it's kind of this title of honor. And to me, you have to earn it. And so if you are demonstrating skills in this vein that actually help people, that helps them heal, helps them shift, and they think you deserve the title, then I think that's how it should be.
Well, tell me a little bit about what experience led you to study and become not what you call yourself, a shaman, but
a shamanic practitioner. I mean, I use shamanic techniques, but I guess what I'm saying is that it's up to the people who are working with me to decide if I'm effective or not. My job is to get out of my own way. Hmm. I love the fool's crow concept that he brought forward of the hollow bones, where my job is to be a hollow bone for others. Mm-hmm. So I have to clean out my own house before I start traipsing around in other people's houses.
I think that's true of everybody who considers themselves a healer.
I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, because your shit can get in the way.
That's right.
And to be able to identify when that's happening is super valuable and important, because then it just muddies the waters. So what happened for me was, it was 1998. I remember this very well. I was a few years out of graduate school. I had studied clinical psychology and was a practicing psychotherapist at the time. I still am. And I started having visionary experiences, which is kind of I just had a spontaneous visionary experience. I was very much awake when it happened, and I really didn't tell anybody about it because I was seeing and hearing things that weren't there. And so as a licensed clinician, I didn't think that would go over too well with folks, but I was super intrigued by the whole thing, but I never thought of it at the time as an introduction to a shamanic path or a shamanic way of looking at life. It was just a series of visions that I had in a very short period of time. And then this kind of thing happens for folks. All these crazy synchronicities happen where I found myself at this healing center. I was going to rent space there. It was in Denver. And Denver is where I had these initial visionary experiences. I found myself at this healing center and I asked, what do you do at this place? And they said, oh, we have a shaman here. And I only had kind of a Hollywood definition of what a shaman was at the time. And for some reason, I said, sign me up for a session. And so I started to study under this woman who called herself a shaman and learned how to vision intentionally.
Wow.
I didn't study with her for very long. All kinds of crazy things were happening at that time. I had this dream where I was in this setting with other people, and it looked like a workshop setting, and this man approached me, and he didn't look familiar to me, and he basically did like a Vulcan pinch on my shoulder and put me into this deep altered state in my dream.
Wow.
And I knew it was important. And then, this is really gross, but this is what happened in the dream. He vomited into my mouth.
What?
And I knew I had to swallow it in the dream. So he was giving me all of this information and I knew I had to take it in. And
what a metaphor.
It's crazy. I know it's a gross dream, but that's what happened. But it was one of those big dreams, you know, you have a few of those in your life and this was one of those dreams. And then fast forward probably it was probably 6 months or so later, my husband had gifted me with a workshop, an introductory shamanic workshop. And I'm sitting in a circle and I was there with Hank Wesselman, and Hank stands up, takes his glasses off. And I was like, holy shit, that's the guy in my dream.
Wow.
And I got chills.
It's like the universe was leading you without your knowledge where you needed to go.
Yeah, I've had a couple of those kinds of dreams mm-hmm. where I've met people. I've met them in the dream time before I met them in physical reality. And it's always been this really important, like my life has changed as a result of those dreams.
Yeah, tell me, how is this experience as shamanic practitioner changed you and your view of the world through this story you're telling on your experience in becoming a practitioner?
Well, yeah, it's really evolved.
Mm-hmm.
I've been learning how to do this for the last, I don't know, it's coming up on 20 years. What I'm coming to is that and this is probably where I'm going to veer away from my colleagues in the shamanic practitioner world. What I've really come to discover, and I could be wrong, is that the dream time to me is consciousness.
And can you just describe that a little more? What you mean?
It's a little esoteric, isn't it?
Well, and this isn't consciousness, but dream time is, or well,
dream time is pure consciousness to me.
Okay.
And it is the symbolic realm. When a shamanic practitioner is in the dream time, to me, they are interacting with consciousness. And consciousness is complex. I think there are different types of consciousness that you can interact with when you're there. There is your higher consciousness, which is what we would say is the part of you that exists always. And it's the part of you when your human self dies that you reconnect with. You can call it your oversoul, whatever. There is your conscious mind, what you're aware of. And then there's your unconscious mind. And that's where a lot of the healing takes place, is in the realm of the unconscious. And it's, to me, shamanism has become all about learning the language of symbolism, because you're in the dreaming. So you're seeing the symbolic representations of, like when I'm doing healing work with folks, I'm seeing the symbolic representations of ways in which they're stuck at the unconscious level. So I'll see the dreaming of patterns, of unconscious patterns that aren't serving them. So it could be the dreaming of an aspect of them that is stuck in maybe very low self-esteem, or a pattern of...
Well, you could share some stories, like maybe explain a little bit. For me, when I came to you, I was just bowled over by the image of me standing or sitting in a lounge chair under a huge sequoia tree with all my bags packed next to me.
Oh, yeah?
And, interpreting something like that for someone, for me, it was like, wow, I have a lot of stuff packed that's ready to go and let go, perhaps. So those are the kinds of images you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. So I will see something that's playing out inside of someone. It's like a film in a way. Hmm. I'll see symbols that represent emotional stuckness or negative belief systems or traumas that are just repeatedly playing themselves out and having an influence over your everyday existence. But because it's so unconscious and it's so habitual, we don't have an awareness that it's playing itself out. So the shamanic healing is about going into entering that narrative and then interacting directly with it. And so taking elements out that aren't working, that's called extraction. But a big hallmark of shamanic healing is power augmentation. It's reconnecting someone with personal power. And I'd like to say that I think if you've been on the planet more than 2 weeks, I think you start losing personal power. We give it away unconsciously to other people. We lose it because of shit that happens to us. But by the time we're adults, I think we all have varying degrees of power loss.
Yeah, we mentioned that in our last time together, soul loss.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same?
Yeah, that's a big source of power. If you lose aspects of your essence because of trauma, retrieving those parts of yourself, which is, thanks to Sandra Ingerman, is called soul retrieval. And I have a special helping spirit who refers to himself as a soul catcher. He catches soul parts and brings them back. He's really good at finding them too.
Nice.
Yeah, so those are... That, of course, would be a big source of power loss, is to lose a part of yourself.
Right. So how has this changed your view of the world when you talk about the dream time being conscious and the higher self and the mind and the unconscious? So your view of the world in this reality versus that? I mean...
Yeah. No, thanks for bringing me back to that. That was your original question. So the nature of reality for me has taken on a whole different flavor, where I guess I would define myself before all of this started happening as a little bit more on the materialist end of things, where I was just, if I could see it, feel it, taste it, hear it, then it was real. But that has totally evolved and totally changed, because what I've come to experience is that reality is much greater. It's much broader than the physical realm. And we can all access different aspects of reality. It just depends on how we focus our perception. And so shamanism is one way to change the focus of your perception and be able to access the symbolic realm of consciousness. And then there's the energetic realm. And I get a lot of pushback on this concept, but I don't think in my experience, I have not seen that. I've seen energy as being separate from consciousness. And people will say, well, everything is energy. And what I think in response to that, and I'm not a physicist, but I would say everything in the physical universe is energy. The dream time is, there's nothing physical about the dream time. It is not the realm of human existence. I mean, it's where it all begins in the dream time, but...
Wow, that is a big discussion, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Because, yeah, it depends on how you define energy, I suppose. Because just the thought energy within that dream time could be looked at as energy. I mean,
could it?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, when I think of energy, I think of subatomic particles, the building blocks of our physical reality. And again, I'm not a physicist, but my understanding of the quantum realm is that you have. That it's just a sea of possibilities. And
that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So you have an intention at the level of dream time, which to me goes into the realm of the energetic, which is kind of the shadow of the dream time. And then it creates form, the possibility of form. And then that pops out into the physical as an experience.
Okay.
Or
I love the term sea of possibilities. It makes me wonder, too, about people who meditate and what ether they go into. Is it comparable or not? Where it's that blank space? I don't know.
I don't know. That's a big question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's complicated. And like I said, please take everything I say with a grain of salt. Because I'm just one girl having crazy experiences trying to make sense of shit.
Well, you've done a lot of studying. You've had a lot of experience with many clients. I'd like to know how this all shakes out in terms of what services you actually provide. How do you define those?
Well, as I mentioned before, I am trained and licensed as a mental health clinician. So I have a foot in the clinical world, and then I have a foot in this other world of the shamanic practitioner. So I offer services here at my wellness center that would encompass straight up talk therapy, counseling. And the big thrust of that is really short term. I like to get to the punchline pretty quickly for folks. I think you can talk about stuff until the cows come home. And I'm more interested in if they're coming here to try to figure some stuff out, then let's get to it. Let's do it. That's kind of always been my approach. And then having this shamanic perspective, I think is maybe kind of a cheat, because I can sort of tune in and maybe pick up on stuff, or helps me perceive what those patterns might be.
So you meet people at their own level. If they want to come in as a clinical experience, they have that. If they're open to exploring a shamanic hour with you around doing some other navigation or exploration, that's available.
Yeah, so there's counseling, there's shamanic healing, which is totally different. There is, I also do kind of a hybrid of, call it shamanic coaching or counseling, where I teach people how to do a shamanic journey and help them access the dream time themselves so that they can resolve their own issues.
And I've seen you do that in some workshop experiences, which have been very powerful. And you also have published some books that have been wonderful for introducing people to the possibilities, to sea of possibilities. And you should definitely put those titles, you know, as a reference piece on this podcast for people to look up.
Okay. So, yes. And then besides all the counseling work and the shamanic work, I opened this wellness center in central Vermont to bring in this energy medicine technology. That is amazing.
And that's in the physical realm.
It's in the physical realm, but it works on the energetic level, okay. Where shamanic work is at the level of consciousness. So we cover all levels of reality here at Lucid Path Wellness.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, but this healing chamber is pretty amazing. It's actually kind of a rare animal. There's not very many of them in the country. I think I'm one of five or six centers in the country. I'm definitely the only one on the East Coast as of right now.
Well, you have to say what it is and what inspired you particularly to bring it to Central Vermont.
It is called the Energy Genesis, and it is a light and sound healing chamber that you recline in, and it puts you into a profoundly relaxed state, which helps to reset and balance your nervous system, and then your body can start healing itself in this environment that it creates. So the machine itself isn't doing anything other than creating this environment that's optimal for self-healing. And I brought it here because I had such a profound experience in it and such a big reaction to it when I first learned about it that after I experienced it, I felt obligated to bring it here. I just...
Well, we'll talk about that experience. You know, what was so big about it for you?
Well, the very first session I had in it, I had moments where I had a complete absence of physical, emotional, and mental tension. That was absolutely delicious. And I'm a pretty chill girl, but to realize when I had the absence of that tension that I was carrying in my body, like, holy cow, this is how it's supposed to be. I had no idea how much I was carrying inside of me. And I thought, this is something I would love for everybody to be able to experience. And then I had really big healing reactions in there with my history of whiplash. The restriction in my neck went away after my first sessions. I did a series of sessions, and I had...
It seems to me, in the way I understood it, is that you probably need more than one session depending on the level of healing that's required for something like whiplash.
It was a long-standing injury. Yeah. I think, you know, the longer you have some kind of symptom, the more time you spend in there, the better. But it's just really good. I mean, I had a whole bunch of... If you want to check out what my experience was, you can look on my website. And on the About page, I have a link to a whole write-up I did on my experiences there. I can put that in the show notes as well. But we're actually talking more about shamanism than... But I wanted to say, well, that's the other thing I'm offering here.
And what's so fascinating, Wendy, about this here at Lucid Path Wellness is that anyone who walks in the door has a wonderful cafeteria list of what could meet their needs. So you, again, can meet people where they're at, both in their higher consciousness or their mind, and those three areas you mentioned.
And that's certainly the hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a beautiful thing to have that many tools in your toolbox to offer. It's pretty neat. I know I've enjoyed quite a few of them myself with you.
Thanks.
So do you have an inspiring story you might want to share working with people as a shamanic practitioner?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I'd have to say most of the people who find their way to me, and it must be because I'm drawing people to me who are feeling more stuck emotionally, and maybe because I'm a clinician, as opposed to getting people who have physical ailments. I get people coming with physical ailments to use the Energy Genesis, but not necessarily for shamanic healing, although sometimes. Mostly it's people coming who are, like I said, stuck emotionally.
But oftentimes that will manifest in a physical
symptom. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. But they're not presenting with a physical symptom when they come to see me. So over the years, I mean, when I get feedback from folks, I'd have to say, I mean, there's not one story that really stands out. I would say in general, like, what just thrills the hell out of me is when somebody will say that they now feel free to live their life in a way that they weren't able to before. So for example, if they had, I mean, it's usually in response to healing trauma that I get the most wonderful feedback. Somebody who couldn't sleep through the night because they were plagued with nightmares related to their trauma, or just in general, they were having nightmares and now they can sleep.
Wow.
Or they found the courage to leave a really dysfunctional, horrible relationship because now they have allies to help them and they knew they weren't alone, which is one of the great things about shamanism is that when you have a healing session, you're, as I was mentioning before, you get reconnected with power, and the power comes in the form of an animal helper who is coming forward to be of service to you. So you have this very tangible tool, and if you use it...
Does everyone have an animal helper?
everyone can, absolutely. I mean, it's just our culture, we're not, we don't operate from this indigenous mind where we're in relationship with everything around us, the environment, the natural world, our communities, ourselves. We're coming from a much more colonial mind perspective where we're trying to control and master our external world.
Yeah.
So this is a very different way of looking at mm-hmm. things. I think everyone has the capacity to connect with an animal ally. Absolutely.
Or even a plant ally.
Or a plant ally. Yeah, it's because a lot of times tree spirits will come forward to be of service during a healing session. And mineral spirits too, like mm-hmm. crystals and stones. And yeah, so lots of allies there. And to know that you're not alone, mm-hmm. that you have the assistance of these, for lack of a better word, spirits. And I refer to them a lot as archetypes.
I think archetypes is a great word to describe them. I know in some other shamanic worlds, is it the black jaguar?
Mm.
And then in ayahuasca, it was the anaconda, where animals are a repeating motif and
they
archetype.
They show up, yeah.
In terms of what maybe their energy is for that person, or how could you describe a spirit animal? Like, why an animal? I don't understand.
Why an animal? Well, I mean, I think it's just they're part of the natural world and they each have gifts that they can bring forward to help. Like when I think of the Black Panther, or the jaguar shows up a lot, especially for women.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I like that.
When women are feeling really powerless and they are maybe they aren't asserting themselves so much, or they're not walking with confidence through the world. The jaguar will show up, the Black Panther will show up and want to help that person to walk like a panther through life, to really sort of own it and connect with that real raw femininity and sexuality and be able to just sort of, I've got your back.
Yeah.
We're going to get you through this situation. We're going to get you through life, that kind of.
Wow. And having that archetype could be one of many that you get mm-hmm. through a session with you, not just one.
Oh, yeah. No, I have an entourage over the years I've been working. I mean, and helping spirits will come and go. I mean, you can have like one primary one. I'm a raven girl. So I think the spirit of the raven will always be on my shoulder whispering sweet nothings in my ear. Over the years, I've had so many different animal friends, and then they'll recede into the background. And then new ones will come forward because I've changed, because I'm facing different challenges.
All our stages.
I'm learning to challenge myself in a new way. And so that animal will be perfect for what I'm trying to accomplish. I may not even know what I'm trying to accomplish. And this animal starts showing up and it's like, oh, come to find out I'm moving in that direction now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really great. Thank you for that.
So inspiring stories, that was your original question.
Yes.
And it's really just, if somebody comes back and says that session was a game changer, then it's like, I always said, I will keep doing this work as long as people keep coming.
Well, and if they're leaving with that, you know, archetype or metaphor or sense of a spirit ally helping them, they're not alone, that has to be huge.
I think it's pretty huge. It certainly has helped me, and it seems to help others too. I mean, just because being human is really tough, and it feels quite isolating, I think, when we're in our own minds.
Yeah.
That we can feel overwhelmed by the things that are in front of us, challenging us internally or externally, and to know that, I have help.
Well, and I think too, just from my own perspective, having been raised a Catholic and finding that hasn't been as satisfying as a spiritual path as an adult, and realizing just with a lot of organized religions who are losing members, that people in general are looking for something more. And I really know from some of the workshops I've been at where you've been working with people to heal themselves through journaling or whatever mode that you offer, that there's a big interest out there because you have a strong following at those workshops. And I just think that that the shamanic practice is come, the time has come for people to be, and people are way more curious.
It does seem to be the case, yeah. And that is my not so secret wish, is that everyone become their own shaman. That's really ultimately why I'm doing all of this work. I understand that you can get stuck and get in your own way, and you need some outside practitioner to help you kind of get through some of the muddiness of your own consciousness. But really, I mean, wouldn't that be badass if everyone had a shamanic practice where they could just learn how to do this work on their own?
Well, that's a sign, I think, of a true healer, or somebody who really helps others heal themselves. And that's what that is. It is in my world. If you teach people how to make their own medicine, how to heal themselves through whatever practice resonates with their curiosity and interest and energy, it's golden.
Yeah.
It's just golden.
Yeah. That's why I teach the workshops. And my workshops generally have the flavor of healing yourself and growing and developing, as opposed to learning how to become a shamanic practitioner. I certainly will do trainings for folks, usually individually, when they want to learn how to do shamanic healing. It's a huge responsibility. And I think a lot of the shamanic workshops out there are kind of focused on that, teaching people how to become shamanic practitioners for others. And it's
in terms of what I've read and learned through you and reading, I just can't even imagine going into that other reality or dream space and not getting lost. You could get lost if you don't know what you're doing, right? That whole intentional need to understand what it is that you're after to let go of or support somebody, you really have to be grounded in an ungrounded space.
Yeah, the degree of focus is intense. That's what I found doing, because people will ask me a lot, is it really tiring? Do you feel drained after a session? And I don't necessarily feel drained or tired. It's just intense, the amount of focus that you need to be able to see clearly. And some people are not, even though they want to do healing work, they might have resistance up, unconscious resistance that me and my invisible friends have to work through to get to the core of what it is that they're needing healing for. So that the focus you need to even understand that the resistance is there, and that's what you're bumping up against, and then to move through that, to get underneath it, to find out, well, what's causing this resistance to begin with, and then start working on that. It's just intense.
Sure.
It's really intense.
And you've been doing this for almost 20 years, sounds like.
Yeah.
So a person out there, in terms of, you know, are there shamans everywhere? I mean, places that are considered hot spots. How would me as a layperson know if a shaman was right for me?
Like, that's a question. I don't know. I think word of mouth is probably the best way to go. That's how I prefer. I mean, my practice has always been kind of under the radar. People will tell other people, and that's how people have found me. Now I have this big storefront in the capital of Vermont, where I'm doing this work, which doesn't feel so under the radar anymore. But
no. And you've done workshops up at the hospital, which have been pretty amazing, with drumming.
The chaos discussions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did that for 10 years and just did the last one in the fall of 2018.
Wow.
Because it just, it had wound down. There are teachers out there who have websites where you can, I'm thinking of Sandra Ingerman. I think she has a practitioner section on her website, and she's a reputable teacher who was on the podcast a couple of episodes ago.
And you're going to interview Hank Wesselman next.
Yes, I'm really excited about Hank.
And there's ways that you can just read a few books to get a sense of what you might be looking for.
Yeah, but I really think word of mouth is the best way. And your gut, if there are any red flags, if somebody's calling themselves a shaman, you may not want to go see that person.
And I imagine you would love another word, because some people say we appropriate other cultures.
Yeah.
In a way that is...
Yeah, that happens a lot in shamanism, where, there's a lot of controversy around that.
There's not much you can do about that right now. But the value of shamanic practitioners and what they offer, how would you summarize the value of shamanism for anyone who's looking for something different to heal with?
Well, I think it has the potential to get right to the heart of things. It can give you very powerful tools to help you move out of old patterns. And it can also help you see yourself in a different way. But again, I'm gonna put a plug in for people creating their own shamanic practice, just a personal shamanic practice, because it's something that pretty much everyone can do. It's really just an intense form of meditation, but it's entertaining because most of us perceive in a visual way. So you are focusing on these visuals and you get invited into this world, this highly symbolic world. And then you start learning the language of symbolism and you can actually start learning what they mean by asking the symbols, "What do you mean?"
Wow.
I mean, there you go, right?
Yeah. Can you give an example of that?
An example of
asking a symbol what they mean?
Sure. If you're going on a shamanic journey and an animal shows up, let's say a fox shows up, you can ask that fox, "Who are you? And what do you have to teach me?" And in answering that question, which can take a little while for us to be able to discern what the answer is, but I think it's well worth the effort.
And you help people interpret that? Or you're saying if you're on your own, you're asking yourself.
Well, you're the best person to interpret. Yeah. But I think the process of any practice that brings your focus inward, like a shamanic practice or a meditation practice or any practice that brings your focus inward, there's a discipline to it. You stick to it and you have to start learning that terrain. I think the art in the shamanic practice is learning to discern between true intuitive guidance and wishful thinking.
Okay, that's huge.
And it takes time because your brain, your conscious mind is going to want to kick in and start running the show. So you have to get a feel for what your conscious mind feels like versus true intuitive guidance. And they do have a very distinct difference. It takes a little time to be able to discern that, but it's well worth the effort.
And so how do you help people discern that?
I think it's just a matter of practice, of having direct experience.
Going to one of your workshops, you helped us come up through visioning practice in the workshop, who those allies would be and how they might help you. And then you leave and those allies are still there and you just start checking in.
Yeah, you develop relationships with them.
You develop relationship and then personally you ask yourself, is it wishful thinking that ally is doing this or is it really happening? So you notice what you notice without forcing what you want.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really huge for people to get that.
Yeah. And this is why I created my workbook, is to help people.
Oh, there you go.
Create their own personal shamanic practice so that they can connect with their own allies and start exploring the terrain of the dream time on their own and then discover what it reveals about them at that particular time in their life. And then, it's super, rich, rich territory.
Super. Is that available online?
It is.
That's a wonderful tool to access for people. So make sure we get that on this.
Yeah, it's the magical path and it comes with audio to help you use sound to get into an altered state.
Wow. I didn't know that. I've been saying wow a lot through this whole interview. Excuse me out there, people. It comes from the heart. So you have a foot in two worlds, Wendy, the dreamtime world of the shaman and the clinical world of the psychotherapist. How do you manage that every day? And how do you see the work at Lucid Path making an impact for people's lives and why?
Huh. Well, having a foot in two worlds has been crazy challenging. In the beginning, I really struggled with my shamanic practice and how it might be perceived by others and how I might be judged. That's a big part of the reason why I kept it under the radar. Because it sounds nuts doing this. And I'm fully aware of that. Over the years, I've had to really come to terms with this. And it's because of the feedback I get from folks. Like I said, I would stop doing this if people stopped coming for healing sessions. And since they keep coming, and a lot of people keep coming back, it has shown me that it's a wonderful way to be of service. It's intense, like I said, but I'm very proud to be of service in this way. I also have been able over the years to see how both practices really inform one another. So when I'm in a counseling session, my intuition can play such a big role in my connections with folks. And vice versa, when somebody's feeling really stuck in a shamanic healing session, to be able to find the words, to be able to connect with somebody and build rapport, hopefully, to help them feel comfortable and safe in this really vulnerable setting of a shamanic healing session, I mean, that's been super valuable. And hopefully I've been effective at that. So having a foot in two different worlds, it's interesting that I kept them so incredibly separate for probably over a decade, even though they're still very separate practices. In my own mind, I've made peace with them.
Sounds like actually a perfect marriage when given the skill set that comes with each and the trust that you have in your intuition and the practice you've done for so many years, that you can really trust what you need to come forth with each person.
That's a great way to put it. It has become a relationship with trust over the years, and I didn't always have it. I mean, I remember in the beginning for years, I would be so nervous before someone would come for a healing session. And then in those moments, right before I was about to share what I perceived, I would have anxiety about, I hope this makes sense. I hope this is going to be helpful because I'm seeing this stuff and these events happened while I was in this altered state. I didn't know how it was going to be taken. And so I would be really nervous about it. And it took hundreds of sessions of feedback for me to start feeling like, okay, maybe I'm perceiving in a way I'm doing okay.
You're trusting that reality.
Yeah.
That is no one else's reality.
Yeah. So now it has become, I almost said like a second home, but it's probably my first home. And my human existence is my second home.
Well, you sound like you're very comfortable with a foot in both worlds on a day-to-day basis. And in general,
now I am, yeah.
You're very grounded to me, and your transparency and vulnerability and what you've shared about your journey through getting to where you are today is beautiful. Wendy, thank you.
Thanks. My hope for the work that I'm doing here at the Wellness Center at Lucid Path Wellness is that my dream is that people, when they walk out the door, that they are feeling powerful and hopeful and just amazed at the capacity they have within themselves to heal themselves.
And that's the best takeaway for you to share with the world right now, and how powerful this practice can be for people. Wow, thanks so much, Wendy.
No, thank you. This has been fun.
I've learned a lot and can easily share what this is now with others as well. So, super.
Thanks, Marie.
Sea of possibilities with Wendy at Lucid Path.
Thanks.